Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us. We're going to jump right in. I'll give you the other particulars later on in the program. We're going to jump right into our program today because I want to get as much information from our guest as is humanly possible, because I think you're going to have a lot of fun with this program. I know I will. I know I say that all the time. I realize that, but what's wrong with that? I enjoy just about every program I do because I learn something new, and that's the whole point of it. Today we're talking about a concept. It's going to be very interesting. We're going to talk about a skeptical journalist discovery. Let me try that one more time. It's a skeptical journalist discovers unseen worlds. And the title of the book is called Piercing the Veil. And Kingsley Guy is my guest. And Kingsley, thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
It's a very interesting book that you have here, and interesting ideas and concepts that you've got going. Nothing that's really totally new, other than the fact that it's coming from you. And I love this one phrase here. I was actually going to have this particular song queued up for this line here, asking the question, have you ever examined your life and wondered, is this all there is? And I was going to kick up the song, is that all there is? And, you know, sometimes I have to ask myself that question. Are you kidding me? This is it? This is all there is? And yet our many of our guests over the 13 years that I've been doing this program and 40 years I've been interviewing, they say that that's not all there is, that there is so much more. I was talking with someone the other day about us as gods or as God, and that having that, we have that power. And I said, well, seems to me like it's no big deal to be omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent. The big deal in our world today is to take on the role of God as creator. Talk to us about that.
Well, you know, what you're talking about, man as God, it's a very Eastern concept in many ways. And there was a 9th century Hindu mystic who talked about basically what he said, God and man are one, but they're not one and the same. In other words, we are all from the same stuff, universal Urstoff, that we all come from it. In that respect, we are all God. But that's not to say that I can bring back people from the dead, or I can do things that some of the great avatars of history have reputed to have done. So it's a concept that's been talked about for a long time. It's a very Eastern concept. And you know, I could even find biblical reference. Is it not written that we are all gods and you will perform greater miracles than I? It's in Western spiritual texts as well. So interesting idea, interesting concept, a whole different view of the universe. I kind of look at the universe as not, is there an intelligence in the universe, but is the universe intelligent? In other words, much more encompassing in that respect. So a good question to ask, and a good question that philosophers and spiritual people have been examining for thousands of years.
Well, now, what I find interesting, and I think about this in the context, for example, of my upbringing, being born Roman Catholic and having read the Bible a couple of times, front to back, both books, and then also reading some of the apocryphal books, which are also very fascinating reading in and of themselves. You know, you make reference to the aspect of some of the things that Jesus did, you know, raising of the dead and turning water into wine and healing the sick, and the list goes on, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And I remember the apostles querying him at some point, watching him doing these incredible miracles and going, wow, that is pretty cool. Hey, could you teach us? Can we do that too? And basically, and again, here, folks, I'm paraphrasing. This is not King Jimmy here. He says, basically, seriously? Yeah, but you really think this is something? Matt, you guys are going to do something. You're going to do greater works than this. I have to tell you that my personal belief is the greater works he was referring to was transforming our lives. Talk to us about that.
Well, absolutely. And that's what my book is about, Piercing the Veil, A Skeptical Journalist Discovers Unseen Worlds. I was a very much a skeptic, and I had a very rough upbringing. My mother committed suicide. I came from an alcoholic family. I had an emotional collapse when I was 20 years old, and I dug myself out of a very deep hole. However, part of the reason I was able to do that was because alcohol gave me courage to do it. And I thought alcohol was my friend for many, many years until I discovered I was age 40 that I was alcoholic and that I had to had a choice. Either I could transform my life or I could die. And the way that people with alcoholism, most people anyway, are able to recover from it is embarking on a spiritual journey. Mm. Like I said, I was a skeptic, a skeptical journalist. I dealt with politics mainly. I was a very successful journalist dealing with mainly with politics. But I had to start looking at other aspects of my life and accept that, hey, maybe there is something to this idea of God and to this idea of spirituality. And I sought God help every day in keeping me away from a drink. And it worked. And I've been sober now for 32 years and transformed my life in that respect. And in the course of those 32 years, I've had many, many, many amazing things happen to me that would not have happened to me if I'd continued drinking and had not gone on a spiritual adventure that I relate in my book, Piercing the Veil.
When you refer to piercing the veil, talk to us for those who are not familiar, and I know there are some folks who are listening for the first time who are not familiar. What is the veil?
Well, I look at the veil as that something that which separates us from other realities or another reality. And how do you get through that and see that all is not the material world in which we live, that there is a spiritual dynamic out there, and it can be accessed if you are willing to take the time and make the effort to do that. But it does take an effort. And like I said, I was so skeptical in my life. I mean, I didn't have any time for God. I didn't pray. I didn't do anything. Didn't meditate. Didn't do anything of that sort. But, you know, faced with the life or death situation of dealing with my alcoholism or giving this a shot at a spiritual life, I chose life, and I took me to amazing places, different states of consciousness, witnessed things, some of which defy the known laws of physics. The known laws, I stress, there's so much that we don't know, and that's I think we're learning more and more as our science starts exploring more esoteric realms in many ways, that some of these things that are related in the Bible, hey, they aren't myth. They very well may have happened the way they're related in the Bible or the lives of the saints or in many, many other recitations about spiritual events.
I feel a little bit like Groucho Marx now, who would say the magic word and win a prize. You've said it twice. You've already said it twice. It's the magic word for today's program because it's a focal point of this program, of my book, choice. Choice. And no matter what condition you are in, no matter what place you are in, no matter what state, continental or otherwise, that you are in, you always, always, always have choices. Now, here's where the block comes in, and I want you to dive into this.
Okay.
If you don't know that you have other choices, how can you choose them? How did you learn about the other choices that you could make?
Well, I speak now in dealing with an addiction, and I think that, you know, the nation is in an opioid addiction crisis, they call it right now, but we've been addiction crisis, the world's been an addiction crisis for thousands of years. You know, what alcohol is does to like 10% of the population is just devastating. I really, it's a hard disease to explain. It's the only disease you can have that tells you you don't have it. And I went through denial for many, 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 many years and really didn't have much of a choice in my drinking. And I'd have a drink and that was going to be it. But then, boy, I'd find out 8 hours later, I'd still be at the bar drinking. However, when I realized my alcoholism, then the choice came in. I had a choice. I had a way out. I could choose a spiritual life, or I could continue the life that I had been living, which was quite successful in many ways. But I reached the turning point. I reached the point of no return. I either had to stop drinking or I would die. And I knew that. I would be dead in 2 years. So the choice came. And it was then that I recognized, hey, I do have a choice. I can do this. I can keep the alcohol out of my system and move forward in a much more positive and enthusiastic life, which I did. And it's like I said, a very, very strange disease. Now, the book Piercing the Veil is not about my recovery from alcoholism. It is about my spiritual experiences that accompanied that. And I had a choice in many ways to follow events that took me from here to there to another place. I had a choice of following what Carl Jung, the psychiatrist, called synchronicities, these events, these seeming coincidences, but coincidences with meaning. Something would happen, and I had the choice. I could pursue that, or I could not pursue that. I generally chose to pursue that, and it took me on an amazing adventure that I relate in my book.
I'll give you an interesting twist on that word. Coincidence. I don't call them coincidences. I call them coincidences.
Mm-hmm.
They're events that coincide, and they're related. We may not understand how they're related, but they are, because they're happening to us, and that's the common denominator.
They're happening to all of us, and I think some events in our lives cause us to recognize them. They may be happening all the time, but what is it that jolts us into recognizing these events? Yeah. In Piercing the Veil, I mentioned the events took place a couple times in my life where frogs showed up. One time over in India, where a frog showed up on the Ganges, and the events led me to a pursuit of Eastern metaphysical thinking, Indian metaphysical thinking, that took me on for years and years and years. Another event 30 years later, where a frog showed up, took me in another direction. And I chose, like I relate these in detail, these events in the book, but after a while, if you look at the events that shape your life and say, oh, these are just coincidences, it becomes unscientific to just relegate them to that. There just seems to be a intelligence working that leads you to these things and gives you the choice of following them or not.
Well, it's interesting to take a look at what's on the other side of the veil. And they say, I don't know if this is true or not, because I've never really pursued this particular area of searching. I just kind of have gone along with my life and enjoyed the things that have happened. Mm-hmm. But they say that the veil either A, becomes the thinnest, or opens up, or what have you, specifically around the end of October, first part of November each year. Now, I don't know why that is, why it happens during that particular cycle of the year, but that's what I have heard. But at the same time, I've also heard it said that there is no one time in the year that you can cross over to that veil in many different ways, whether it be by leaving this world and say, hey, I'm done all I want to do, and I'm ready to go. I'm not depressed. I'm not self-destructive. It's like, I want to get a new car. I would like to trade my old car in and get a new one. And there's nothing wrong with this one. I just would love to experience a new one. And yet this world seems to have taken on this programming that says, no, I'm sorry, you can't do that. And if you do, we are going to heap so much guilt upon you, even for thinking about it, that probably, most likely, you're going to want to leave even more. you know what I'm saying? You know, yeah. Why would I want to stick around if that's the way you're going to treat me? Did you ever contemplate that aspect of breaching the veil before you really knew what it was? Basically saying, "I, this is too much for me. This alcoholism is it's just too much. I'm going to go. I'm just going to go."
You know, I had two suicides in my family, my mother and her sister, my aunt. And they reached that point and both committed suicide. So, you know, much of my life, I don't think I ever thought, let's put it this way. I had the fear that I might commit suicide. And that was something that I had to deal with in my life. But, you know, when you have suicide in the family, a lot of guilt is associated with it, guilt on your part. Whoa, if I'd been a better son, would my wife or my mother not have committed suicide? She committed suicide when I left the country. All the guilt that was heaped on, or that I heaped on myself about that. So I spent, as I mentioned earlier, I had a nervous collapse. It took me a couple of years to get out of that. And I don't know that I contemplated suicide, but I had the fear that I might commit suicide. I didn't want to commit suicide. I wanted to get better, but I had that fear that I might, because, you know, I had suicide in my family. And, there have been other times, though, that I've been thinking, you know, well, I'm not getting any younger, and I look at the possibility, not the possibility, the definite fact that I will be crossing over. But with the events in my life, the fear is not there like it used to be. That the fear of death is eased substantially. And when the time comes, I hope I'm able to just make that passing as peaceful as possible, as confident as possible that there will be a better life on the other side. Now, of course, what you talk about, if you look at some Eastern thinking, not some in Eastern, but Buddhism, Hinduism, we are really in a learning, in this earth, a learning state where you learn things in a lifetime, and then you come back and you live another lifetime and another lifetime, and you gradually become, gradually perfect yourself as you move through lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. Believe it, don't believe it. Every religion, I think, has that idea that our consciousness exists beyond this, and that the consciousness does progress either in this plane again and again, or other planes. So it's common to all religions.
I want you to contrast some things for me, if you would. And it's going to require you to delve back into your old self and then, of course, jump into your new self. And the first one is the concept of God. Old self and new self.
Yeah. Old self, there wasn't much of a concept of God, but I just looked upon it as a myth. It served society. It served cultures less educated than ours. And it helped the idea, helped to organize a society. But as we advanced in science and what we know, the concept of God for me was strictly mythological. That I'm very materialistic. This is all there is. That was, if I thought about it at all, that was my idea. Looked at the spiritual texts, and there were a bunch of really myths, not truth, but myths. The ideas started to change, like I said, when I sobered up and started to realize, at least my realization, that yes, there is, and as I mentioned earlier, not an intelligence in the universe, but an intelligent universe of which I was a part. So that shifted my concept and idea of God. Many of the events that have shaped my life since my sobriety, and actually even before that, indicate that there is more going on than we can see, touch, examine, that there are subtle energies in the universe that we can't measure, but that they are there and help shape our lives. So it's, I guess you could say, in some degree, a pantheistic look of the existence of God. But there are intelligences in the universe beyond us that help to shape the direction in which we go. Mm. And how we live. And we are active participants in it. We have choice, as you said earlier.
Our connectedness to one another, that intangible, spiritual, I'll use that word at this point, connection that we all share. The old Kingsley to the new Kingsley.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, you talk about connectedness. One of the people I deal with in the book is Dr. Edgar Mitchell. He was the sixth man to walk on the moon. And he and I knew him down here and had several in-depth conversations with him, a fascinating man. I had experienced what in Sanskrit is called the state of samadhi. I experienced that after coming back from an ashram in upstate New York. But it's where your consciousness merges with the universal consciousness. It's the most amazing event of my life. Edgar had that same experience coming back from the moon. He was the lunar module pilot, and he's coming back, and he's not at that point doing anything but looking at the stars and the Earth and the moon as the spacecraft turns slowly on its axis. And, he entered that state of samadhi and that recognition of universal connectedness. And we look at our, and after he got back to the moon, his post-NASA career was spent looking at the scientific foundations of the spiritual experiences, founded something out near you, the Institute of Noetic Sciences, that explores the paranormal and the nature of consciousness. So our ideas, I think, now are beginning to shift, and you're talking about universal connectedness and the idea of some of quantum physics ideas, the idea of multiple dimensions, the idea that, yes, we are indeed all connected, is starting to gain more and more of a scientific foothold, which has the possibility of changing humankind's entire outlook on spirituality and outlook on life in general.
Now, you and I have sort of traveled a similar path. My searching began about the age of 17, starting with what I like to refer to as my metaphysical primer, Autobiography of a Yogi, that I have read 100 times or more.
I've read it 3, but not 100.
Well, now I have it on Audible, and I can listen to it about as many times as I want.
Interesting. I think Steve Jobs, at his funeral, I'd heard
That was the only book that was on his phone. The only book that was on his phone. I found that fascinating. Going back to the old and new Kingsley, the concept, and this is why I brought up the Middle Eastern aspects, the concept of dualism, right and wrong, good and bad, good and evil, white and black, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Very Manichaean. as a former journalist, I think that's how journalists operate. It's the black hat and the white hat. There's no sense of gray in the way journalists tend to report stories.
Right.
But, the Manichaean dualism, of course, in Eastern philosophy, that's when you talk about unity, it takes a different perspective. We live in two. Let's say our existence is rather complex. We certainly live in the material world in which we have to obey the law. We have to honor other people. You know, there is good and bad in this world, and our laws define it. But what is it beyond that? I mean, in the Eastern ideas, we'd look at the illusion. You go beyond the illusion that in which we're living, and you start seeing a universe of totality, and it's a whole different idea in which you perceive existence. Now, good and bad, I mean, like I said, we are living in a classroom in some respects. We've got, and then I think a lot of spiritualists would say our purpose here is to rise in our spiritual levels and our spiritual understandings. And certainly, you know, the teachings of Jesus, the Buddha, other great teachers, spiritual teachers, do talk about the nature of heaven and hell and the progress of the soul. So, you know, I look at this life, I think, very much as a classroom. The way I operated when I was younger is not the way I operate now. Try to become a better person, because when I leave this this planet or this existence, I certainly hope to end up in a better place. If I have to come back, I hope I don't have to repeat the mistakes that I made in this lifetime.
So. That would be nice, wouldn't it? But I do know this. I do know this much, and that is that if, and I say this with a big I, if there is nothing after this life, it won't matter because we won't know.
Absolutely.
However, my intellect, which I believe is given by that intelligence, is part of that intelligence in the universe, it tells me that, first of all, my life has meaning.
Yes.
And if it has meaning, then it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever and is totally illogical that there's nothing after this. It's like, well, what the heck is the point of all of this? And some would say, well, but see, that's still just the musings of the mind of man to try to make sense of it and try to make himself feel better, you know, so that at least he can die, if you will, or transition to nothingness with maybe a sense of belonging. What do you think about that?
Well, in the literature is full of people who talk about life on the other side. People, you know, the events that transpire in my life and many people's lives certainly indicate that there is something beyond what, you know, the material world in which we exist. I think people often in this society that we live in now, this modern society, probably the post-Enlightenment or the Enlightenment and post-Enlightenment society, tends to relegate so much of this to what you were talking about. We're just trying to talk ourselves into it. But yet the facts are out there to be studied, to be looked at, and some eminent scientists have looked at it. Alfred Russel Wallace, who co-discovered or co-formulated the idea of natural selection and evolution, was what person who studied this, who studied the spirit beings that were showing up at seances in the 19th century, and other scientists, eminent scientists of that age studied it, and some of them concluded, hey, this is very real, that these spirit beings do exist. You know, so much literature that's out there about it that it can't be ignored. It's real.
Yeah. All right. So now intuitives, psychics, mediums, channels, spiritualists, old Kingsley and new Kingsley perspective.
Old Kingsley was that seances were a bunch of nonsense. The miracles related in the Bible were just products of primitive minds. That's the old Kingsley. The new Kingsley, who has been to seances, who has had things materialize, who has seen this happen, and that I relate in the book, like I said, seen things that defy the known laws of physics. These things can't be denied. And you look at people, I mentioned Wallace, there's other scientists who have studied that. Edgar Mitchell has studied it. As a matter of fact, Edgar's daughter wrote the foreword to my book. I'm sure he would have done it, but he passed away a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. But he experienced it, and like I said, he changed his life to the point where he started examining these phenomena and determining that, hey, many of these things are real. Is there a lot of fraud out there? Sure, but just because there are some fraudulent mediums doesn't mean all mediums are fraudulent. These events happen. Yeah. Things do materialize. The miracles related in the Bible can and do happen still. So, let's say broaden my perspective into recognizing that we think we know what's going on, but I think as Hamlet said, there's more to heaven and earth, Horatio, than is dreamt of in your philosophy. And I think we just need to expand our philosophy as we are moving forward and discovering more.
No question about it. Piercing the Veil, a Skeptical Journalist Discovers Unseen Worlds. We will continue with Kingsley Guy, the author, and we encourage you to go to his website, which I believe is kingsleyguy.com, and we hope that you will check it out. We will be linked to his website at SoundCloud, iTunes, and all of the other places where you can listen to the podcast, as well as on the homepage of richarddugan.com. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We'll be right back.
Tell me your story.
Oh, hi. Welcome back. Thank you for joining us. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I was just kind of looking around the corner of the curtain there just to see what was there. And the Oz, he's back there. He's back there pulling the strings and turning the knobs and pulling the levers and all of that good stuff. And that's a bunch of hooey, because there's nobody behind the veil pulling your strings. Kingsley Guy is my guest, and we're talking about piercing the veil. You don't get to pull it back, you got to pierce it. I know, it's kind of one and the same. I have to say, Kingsley, that one of the analogies I've come up with over the years, after working for 15 years especially at a Christian radio station, I came up with this wonderful analogy that doesn't set well with a lot of folks, and that is that you have this individual, she's walking in this giant meadow, beautiful green meadow, surrounded by trees, and they're walking with their hands cupped in front of them, as if they could hold their personal will, their individual will in their hands, and they're going, I just want to do God's will, I just want to do God's will, I just want to do God's will. And they toss it in the air. And there's God. And God is in tears. Oh my, one of my creation wants to do my will. Catches the individual's will in the hands and starts compressing it down to the size of a baseball. Mm-hmm. And rears back and throws a 90-mile-an-hour Nolan Ryan fastball, hits him square in the head, and utters these words: then do something with the life I gave you. You are not a puppet on a string being manipulated by forces you do not understand.
Mm. Mm.
Are we being manipulated from your perspective as the new Kingsley Guy? Are we being manipulated by forces we do not understand? Or is it something we are allowing? We're 100% responsible for what's happening to us.
I think that we are being given opportunities and perhaps being led, but I wouldn't call it manipulated, because we have choice. I did not need to stop drinking. I had the choice. I could, or I didn't need to. I could pursue a spiritual life and deal with my alcoholism or not. However, I do believe that I was led to the recognition that I had to do something. So I believe I had the choice, but I believe I was offered the opportunity. And I see that playing out in other aspects of my life. I've written a couple of books. I had the opportunity. I didn't have to do it, but I had the opportunity and chose to do it. Along with Piercing the Veil, I wrote a novel set in ancient Egypt called Queen of the Heavens. It's a spiritual-based novel about a young girl who has spiritual healing powers, and she grows up to be queen. I didn't have to write that book. I tried to change from journalistic writing to novel writing, joined a writer's group, read my first chapter thinking it was brilliant, and was pummeled. I had a choice. Okay, I could not write it and stick to journalism, or I could go out and I could learn the techniques that would make the novel sing. And I chose the latter. And it took a long time. Journalistic writing and novel writing is quite different. But I had the choice. I could do one or the other. I chose to pursue another branch of writing. And I didn't have to write Piercing the Veil. I mean, I'm doing okay. I'm living down in a nice condominium in Fort Lauderdale. I could be out on a golf course and going to the early bird dinners and without any problem. But I chose to write it. I was given the opportunity and I took it. And you know, I'm at that point in life where, you know, like I said, I could be living a much more leisurely life than I'm living, but I choose not to. So I think we're led. But I think we also have the choice to follow through on what we're led to, would be my outlook on it.
Well, I'll tell you, you had the choice to change from the very beginning. But as you say, the opportunity hadn't yet come along, if I'm understanding correctly, specifically regarding your alcoholism.
Yeah. You know, I looked at alcohol as a friend for so many, many years of my life. You know, you have a few drinks and you can conquer the world. It may have been a friend for a while because, like I said, I was dealing with some severe emotional issues. It became almost a psychotropic drug for me. And I was very successful in my career. I was an editorial page editor of a major metropolitan newspaper for 23 years. You know, like I said, when I was 40 years old, the realization struck me. That voice in the head came from somewhere, and I don't know where. Sober up, you'll be dead in 2 years. And that scared me into doing something about it. But I still had the choice. Mm-hmm. I still had the choice. How many times did I pledge not to drink again, to find myself drunk a few days later? You know, but it finally came to that point where I had to make a choice, and the choice I made was sobriety in life.
Well, now, I've got a question for you in that regard, because it is said that the majority, if not all, of our addictions have nothing to do with that which we are, quote unquote, addicted to, but has to do with some deep-seated emotional or psychological something that happened in our lives, or potentially past lives, if you choose to believe that. And that if we would but heal that part of ourselves that generated the need for the addiction, to hide from that, to numb ourselves from the pain of that, that, for example, you, and I mean this very respectfully, you one day would be able to say, I'm not an alcoholic anymore. I'm free of that addiction because I healed this part of me that needed that alcohol to hide from it in order to just get through from day to day.
I believe, and having, you know, like I said, 32 years of sobriety, believe there is often a genetic component to addiction. I believe I had it. I think there's more than a genetic component. I think it's a physical disease. I think it's a spiritual disease, mental disease. And certainly you have to deal with the mental aspects of it as well. One of the things that recovering alcoholics will often say, you can't turn a pickle back into a cucumber.
I like that. That's very good.
Yeah, and having heard enough stories about people who have gone for years and years and years without drinking and saying exactly that, well, I can go out and have a drink now, only to find that no, they can't, that the disease has progressed, even though they haven't drunk, that it's been in remission, but it has not gone away. And as soon as that first drink hits you, boy, you're right back on the treadmill again. So I'm not going to prefer not to take that chance.
No, I understand. Absolutely. Absolutely. So it sounds to me like prior to the drinking, there was the potential for being an alcoholic. Now, in your 30 plus years of sobriety, there is still the possibility for being an alcoholic, or I should say, for relapse, for, as they say, falling off the wagon.
Yeah, I don't think there's a possibility. I think it's 100% certainty.
Okay.
Would be my feeling about myself. Yeah.
No, I understand that. No, that makes sense. And I guess each person has to make their own decisions in that regard and come to grips with their own definitions and so forth. But I'm curious as to how the new, I keep putting it this way, the new Kingsley. What's that?
I'm getting pretty old up there in age to be a new Kingsley, but yeah.
Sure. But how your transformation, you know, I'm trying to put this into words here. You've been through a transformational experience, not just the alcoholism and then the sobriety, but the spiritual journey. What has your spiritual journey told you and or taught you about your alcoholism or this dis-ease, and how important or unimportant is it to your overall, and we'll put it this way, immortal existence?
I think it is all very much connected and vitally important to my immortal existence. You spoke of autobiography of a yogi earlier, and of course in Hinduism, and Paramahansa Yogananda was a Hindu, the idea of birth, death, and rebirth, and a learning process as we go through existence, very important. I had to deal with my alcoholism. I think if I hadn't dealt with it in this lifetime, I think it's very probable I would have to deal with it in the subsequent lifetime. So still may have to. I don't know. Do we accept the idea of coming back and learning more and more and more and more? I look at my life, I look at my studies, and I think that's probably the case. And some days, in some lifetime, I would have had to deal with this. And in the process of still dealing with it in this lifetime. And I think that's advanced my soul, advanced my, certainly kept me alive for the last 30 years, because I would have been dead had I not dealt with it. And yeah. I would have discovered what's on the other side of the veil, for good or for ill.
Do you think that everybody has an addiction of some sort that is keeping them from finding, say, their true self, their real self, again, connecting with that immortal part of who we are?
I think there's a lot of addictions. Some society looks upon quite positively. Some people are workaholics, and society does not necessarily condemn that, although it might cause tremendous problems within their own life. Maybe family life, maybe they don't spend enough time with their wife or their children or husband and children. But they bring in the money, and they, from all intents and purposes, look highly successful. And certain addictions, or maybe what you might want to call obsessions, can result in positive things. I wrote a novel, and there was a certain degree of obsession to writing that novel. Matter of fact, if you're going to write a novel, you have to have a couple of things. One is a pretty big ego to think you can do it. Another is the humility to realize, hey, this is going to take a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
and maybe I don't know everything I know, thought I knew. And another is a little bit of obsession that I've got to do this. You know, I hear people say, I love to write. I love to write. I love to write. When I hear people say that, I generally think, well, they're probably not ever going to write a great book. I look at writing more as a quarrying stone. It can be a very, very cumbersome, frustrating process. But once you get it done, it is quite gratifying. But the actual getting up in the morning and saying, I got to get to the typewriter because I love, or the word processor or whatever, because I love it so much. I never found that to be the case in my writing, journalistic or fiction.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I would assume that you have other ideas for novels or for some kinds of stories that you want to put out there. Is there more of a – do you find that you have this sort of calling for – more spiritually based, if you will, books like Piercing the Veil? This is your memoir of a sort for this part of your life. But could there be subsequent volumes, if you will, dealing with other aspects of your life that, of course, then tie back into this spiritual journey that you've been on for the past 30 years?
Yeah, well, I have the rough draft of a second novel set in Egypt, about 70,000 words done on that. Whether I'm going to pursue that right now, I'm not sure. I've got another idea kicking around. I am a journalist. Piercing the Veil, as I say straight up front in Piercing the Veil, I'm not a guru or a preacher or in any way a trying to convince anyone of any specific religion. I'm a journalist reporting on the facts that have shaped my life. And I've got another idea cooking around in my mind. You don't believe me? Well, you take a look at some other people who had very spiritual lives that you might not think about, like Henry Ford, like Thomas Edison, like, as I mentioned, Alfred Russel Wallace. Look at some of the people who really recognized the existence of a spiritual dimension and how that shaped their lives.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking about either going with the novel or attempting to write that other book. One I'd be writing as a novelist, the other I'd be writing as a journalist / historian. So I'm kind of up in the air right now on exactly where I'm going to go, but it'll be one of the two. One of the two, definitely.
Mm-hmm. KingsleyGuy.com is the website. Kingsley Guy's been my guest, and we've been talking about Piercing the Veil. It is a skeptical journalist discovers unseen worlds, and we should have you back to find out what those worlds consist of and some of the lessons learned. But you certainly can pick up a copy through his website, which is KingsleyGuy.com, and we will be linked to your website, Kingsley. And should you find yourself out here in the Santa Barbara area, we would love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
Okay, I was out in Lake Tahoe last week, and I love it out there. And the book's also Piercing the Veil and Queen of the Heavens, also available through Amazon or through the website, either way.
That's right. That's the book on Egypt, Queen of Heaven. Queen and we'll look forward to talking to you about that as well. Before we let you go, I have three final questions to ask all of my guests. I ask you these. You may have answered them in some fashion during the interview, but I ask you to answer them straightforward here. The first one is, Who is Kingsley Guy?
Kingsley Guy, you want the specifics? Holy smokes, I don't know that I can answer that with one simple word, but I was a professional journalist all my life, quite successful at it, but events in my life caused me at this point, and I'm a septuagenarian, caused me to focus on writing about myself and about my journey. I live in Fort Lauderdale. I don't need to be doing what I'm doing, but I'm doing it because I want to do it, and I think my experiences might help open other people's eyes to existence beyond the material.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
Like I said, I'm not a guru, I'm not a preacher, but I do relate amazing events, and I'd like to see other people start relating events in their life that are amazing. I think sometimes people are reluctant to talk about their spiritual experiences mm-hmm. because they'll be ridiculed. They mm-hmm. might even have people calling them insane. But these things happen, and I think we start talking about it more and more could maybe help a little bit of a spiritual revival in this country and in this world. And I think we need a spiritual revival if we're going to progress, the human race is going to progress.
Absolutely. And finally, mm-hmm. what is your life's purpose?
Well, my life's purpose, as I say, is to reveal another reality with storytelling. And that's actually something I have on my business card.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, and Piercing the Veil is a story. It's the story of my life. Queen of the Heavens is a story. It's a story, a spiritual story of about a young girl in ancient Egypt who has these many mystical experiences that shaped her life. So reveal another reality through storytelling. That, I think, is my life's purpose, at least at this point in my life.
Well, Kingsley, I thank you so much for joining us here on the program, sharing your story and your journey through your alcoholism to this wonderful spiritual walk that you have now. And we do look forward to having you back again in the future.
I would very much appreciate it and enjoyed so much doing the show with you.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. A reminder that we can be heard Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. and Monday mornings at 1 a.m. on this fine station, as well as the podcasts at Spotify, SoundCloud, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher. Let's see, did I say iTunes? As well as Blueberry and several others. Player FM is another one as well. We certainly hope that you enjoyed our program. We hope you will join us next time for another edition of Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Until then, love to Lal.